think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I woke up this morning, got myself a gun. Mama always said I'd be the chosen one.
Arizona's Democratic governor mobilizing the state's National Guard to the border. She says she's doing what the Biden administration won't. Governor Katie Hobbs taking action after a visit last week to a port of entry that was so overwhelmed by migrants, it had to shut down.
Hundreds of single adults crossing illegally, a lot of them coming in from all over the world. Some of the countries we encountered yesterday from Africa, Congo, Guinea, Senegal, others from Colombia and Ecuador. And listen to these numbers. Just in the last 3 weeks alone in this Tucson sector, Border Patrol reports there have been more than 54,000 illegal crossings. And that does not include any of the known gotaways.
Not the known gotaways in those numbers. If you've got a Democrat governor deciding cannot take any more of this down here along the border, I mean, we've already got Democrat governors in other states in the north and way far away from the border. They're recognizing this is all upside down. This is not helping us. And we can't fund it. We can't take care of it. But if you're right on the border where they're coming across on a routine basis, you heard the numbers. And which, ironically, you've got the Democrat governor, Katie Hobbs, deciding to do exactly what her running mate against her in the last election was saying she would do. Said, Carrie Lake said, you put me in as governor, we will go down there and we'll start putting National Guard troops on the border. Now Katie Hobbs has reached that point. We've got to stop them. We can't continue to let it happen. And who are you going to blame? That would be the Biden administration. And all those progressives who are all about opening the borders, thinking that if they come across like this, they'll vote for us. Many of them probably won't vote at all, and many might actually want to come target you as a criminal victim, and many might also be planning your demise and your family's demise by a terrorist attack. Welcome to America. You're free to roam about the country under the Biden administration. Thanks for joining us. Here we are, December 18, 2023, second hour of Larry Connors USA. We're here for you Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. And when we're on the air, we're streaming video at News Talk STL, Facebook and Twitter. Also, Larry Connors USA, Facebook and Twitter. And if you miss anything, video or audio, or you want to go back and pull one up just because you want to go through it again, LarryConnorsUSA.com. LarryConnorsUSA.com. And I am asking, if you go back and pull one up or you're listening to it later, after you listen to it, push share, send it to someone else so they can hear it, watch it. Thank you. We all know the problems along the border. Even the left knows it, but they just won't admit it. I mean, all this money package that the Biden administration is trying to get through saying, well, we're going to help deal with the border. That's not true. They were simply going to bring more people down to help process illegals coming in. Now, granted, keep in mind, not only at the border, but even down in the triangle below Mexico, they were giving them fast visas, basically, that, well, let's just say you're going to go or you want to go and you want to go for asylum. All right, check this. Okay, you can take this. You can go into the U.S. and then later we'll reach out to you and bring you back in front of a judge to decide if you really had a legitimate claim of asylum. Yeah, fat chance. If they started today with all the cases they've already done, it would be years before they get everyone covered if they added no more. Talk about Looney Tunes. But it reaches a point where it's not so funny. Not so funny if you're living along the border. It's not so funny if you have a loved one killed by an illegal in the country because they just wanted to take the guy's watch or your daughter's necklace or physically, sexually assaulting her because she was there. Now, you're going to hear some people say sometimes, well, That might have happened to that child anyway, or that deadly accident from a DUI, that might have happened anyway. Maybe, but that illegal, the one that actually carried out that particular crime, would not have been here to do it. It had to be someone else. Might be another illegal. Might not be anyone illegal. But they simply want to justify there's more and more reason to let these people in. When the FBI director made it very clear, we need to know better. We need to act better. And yet, what are we doing? Nothing. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
According to the FBI director last week, he's never seen more threats to the homeland than he does today. Wherever he looks, he sees blinking lights. The border has been obliterated since January 21 till now. We've had 6 million people come to date. There are 3.6 million on schedule to come this year alone. The policy choices of the Biden administration has made the border a dangerous place to come to. America is under threat, according to the FBI director, since October the 7th. Jihadist groups want to attack us because we're helping Israel. I've never been more worried about a 9/11 than I am right now.
And we all should be worried about a possible 9/11 because we have so many nations represented coming across our border. And we know some terrorists because we've caught them. They're on a no-fly list. Why are they on a no-fly list? Because they're suspected terrorists. But now, if they can just get to Mexico or anywhere south, make their way across the border, and that does not include the numerous hundreds now of Chinese military-age single men coming across the border, normally in the dark of night. Not because they don't want to be seen trying to come into America to get a job. You have to assume it's something nefarious. And you have to assume they're coming with the blessings and or orders of the Chinese premier. For what purpose? To destroy America from inside. To put a fifth column, as they would call it. So, over the weekend, Donald Trump went on a tirade against the open borders, what needs to be done about it. I want you to hear this ABC report. It's a mix of fact and speculation and shortchanging some facts and omitting others. Standard state-controlled media.
Former President Donald Trump is holding a commanding lead in this Republican primary, but he is now facing criticism for lavishing praise on dictators and ramping up his attacks on immigrants, using phrases that have clear ties to white supremacy and Hitler. On the campaign trail, former President Donald Trump is drawing big crowds in a swing through early voting states, but coming under fire for these anti-immigrant comments he made in New Hampshire this weekend.
They're poisoning the blood of our country. That's what they've done.
That language echoes white supremacists and was used by Adolf Hitler in his autobiographical manifesto, Mein Kampf, where Hitler criticized mixing races, calling it, quote, blood poisoning. Trump has repeatedly used the phrase.
He's disgusting. And what he's doing is dog whistling to Americans who feel absolutely under stress and strain from the economy and from the conflicts around the world. And he's dog whistling it to blame it on people from areas that don't look like us.
And you recognize that voice, Chris Christie. And of course, he's very quick to get time on any major network if he's going to say something bad against Trump, saying that Trump is dog whistling. And, of course, the ABC report was quick to point out he's using language from Hitler's Mein Kampf. He's going to poison the blood of Americans. He actually said of America. But let's say Americans as well. That's not at all what he's saying. And he's talking about not migrants, as they would have you believe. He's talking about illegals. There's a clear, reasonable understanding and a difference if you're trying to be sane about it. If you're coming across the border in the dark of night or coming across because hordes of others are in front of you and you're coming in illegally, if you go through the process to come to America by whatever form you have available, some countries offer a lottery system, and you're coming for that reason and or legitimate asylum, you come through the proper channels. And I want you to stop and think about how many would-be Americans are waiting because they can't get in because we can't even take care of the illegals. So we're not about to be able to take care of the legals. I have no doubt some of them reach a break point and they say, to hell with it, I'll just go in illegally. Everybody else is. Wouldn't surprise me, would you? But again, back to the state-controlled media and how they're treating Trump. Again, trying to point out that he is warmongering. He's using language of dictators and things of that nature. They are not only missing the point, they know they're missing the point and redirecting you.
If elected, Trump promised to carry out mass deportations, deputizing the National Guard to arrest undocumented immigrants.
I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration, stop the invasion of our southern border, and begin the largest domestic deportation operation in American history.
On the campaign trail, the former president also praising dictators, at one point invoking Russian President Vladimir Putin, using quotes from a top U.S. adversary to attack President Biden.
Vladimir Putin, has anybody ever heard of Vladimir Putin? Of Russia says that Biden's, and this is a quote, politically motivated persecution of his political rival is very good for Russia because it shows the rottenness of the American political system.
The Biden campaign responding with a blistering statement, writing Trump parroted Adolf Hitler, praised Kim Jong-un, and quoted Vladimir Putin while running for president on a promise to rule as a dictator and threaten American democracy. And Trump's own words turning off some Republican voters.
He takes things to the extremes, and this is part of the drama we're trying to get away from. There's no reason for it.
But the former president is still the far and away frontrunner, ahead of his Republican rivals by 50 points.
He's not afraid to hurt people's feelings, and there's nothing wrong with that. People really need to toughen up a little bit.
Toughen up a little bit. My co-producer, Quentin, had pointed out, he said he was listening to a news report over the weekend and heard them lift about those 2 seconds where Trump was talking about they're going to poison America. And he said, I know there was more to it. I knew immediately they had shortchanged the subject. He went and pulled up some and saw the full thing and realized, yep, once again they did it. But too much of the public just simply hears it and buys into it. I'll give ABC credit for giving the credit or blame is a thin line to the White House for saying that Trump was parroting Hitler and praising dictators. He didn't. What did Trump actually say regarding illegals? Let's let you hear exactly what he said just on that issue.
We got a lot of work to do. You know, when they let, I think the real number is 15, 16 million people into our country, when they do that, we got a lot of work to do. They're poisoning the blood of our country. That's what they've done. They poison mental institutions and prisons all over the world, not just in South America, not just the 3 or 4 countries that we think about, but all over the world. They're coming into our country from Africa, from Asia, all over the world. They're pouring into our country. Nobody's even looking at them. They just come in. The crime is going to be tremendous.
Yeah, the crime is going to be tremendous. Escalation of terrorism. FBI Director Wray saying the other day, as you were hearing from Senator Graham earlier in the segment, our terrorist threat is a very high level right now. And on the polling for how it looks for Trump going into the primary, 60% or more ahead of every primary opponent. And then when it comes to Trump and Biden, Joe Concha, Fox analyst, has an interesting comparison.
We are now entering the kind of territory Richard Nixon was in 1974 before he resigned. You have to go back to the same questions when you're talking about this president that most likely Americans are asking every day. Is he too old? Yes. Is he mentally or physically capable to do the job? No. Is he mentally or physically capable to do the job for another 4 years? No. Will he improve or decline with age? I think that's the rhetorical question to end all rhetorical questions. We know the answer. And anyone out there can Google right now. President Biden's schedule. On Friday, he had 2 items on his schedule, Todd. He received the daily intelligence briefing in the mid-morning, and then he had lunch with Vice President Kamala Harris. That's it. Nothing over the weekend. And then today, absolutely nothing outside of receiving the daily intelligence briefing at 11 a.m. more than 5 hours from now, because apparently our enemies like to sleep in on Mondays after a long weekend.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, even if you're a terrorist, you like to sleep in a little bit. Come on. Joe Concha, you're being kind of rough on Biden at that point, aren't you? No, not hardly. Well, that's a tough schedule. And as I said in the previous hour as well, I mean, the fact that he had to sit for a lunch with Kamala, that he should have gotten war pay, hazard pay for that, I would think. Wonder if there's a coherent sentence between either one of them in the process. In fact, I wonder if you ask KJP at the next White House briefing, what did they discuss? Oh, that's a personal thing. I'm not going to have it. They don't know. They don't care. They just kind of move on. Keep moving. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see. But Concha also points out Obama has some concerns.
When you look at David Axelrod, for example, who's very close to former President Obama, when he goes on national television and basically begs Joe Biden to drop out of this race, there is a reason for that. It's Axelrod talking, yes, but it's more Obama talking. And now you hear from other people close to Barack Obama saying that this could be a situation where Democrats lose the White House. They're very much in jeopardy of losing the Senate when you consider they have to defend West Virginia and Montana, for example, in Ohio. This could be the type of situation where Donald Trump not only wins, but he has the Senate and the House as well to pass whatever he chooses to pass as far as the border and as far as energy and as far as crime and the economy and so on. So when we hear these warnings, they are very, very real. Democrats are panicking at this point because they know if it's not Joe Biden, who are you going to take off the bench? Who is Mariano Rivera that's going to come out of the bullpen and save the party? And right now, there aren't very good alternatives when you look at who is on the Democratic bench.
Yeah. And the Wall Street Journal editor, Annie Linsky, pointed out in an article, Obama feels Democrats could lose, adding that Obama knows it's going to be a close race. The alternative is pretty dangerous for democracy, according to that same source. Talking about Trump would be dangerous. Same old line. And you heard Concha mention Axelrod. And he said on his Twitter account over the weekend, it's very late to change horses. A lot will happen in the next year that no one can predict. And Obama's team, or rather Biden's team, says his resolve to run is firm. Well, that's fine until you stumble and break a leg. But he continued arguing, Biden is justly proud of his accomplishments. And what, at the same time admitting the Biden poll numbers will send tremors of doubt through the Democrat Party. Not bedwetting, as Axelrod said, but legitimate concern. And part of those numbers involve the economics. CNN chief legal analyst and host Laura Coates was talking about how Biden is polling at this point. And then she was asked in an interview with Bill Maher about, what about all this issue with the economy? And she said, I don't know. I feel like people talk about the feelonomics, right? How I feel about something more than what the actual data is. I know how much milk costs. I know how much my gas costs. I know how I feel about both. But people are not always on board and saying, you might be telling me all the wins you have, but if I don't feel like I'm winning, then I'm not winning. And you won't either. That's Bidenomics. My next guest is going to give us a view on the restaurant industry under Bidenomics over the last year. Not trying to make it political for them, but just what are the real numbers and issues they face, especially since COVID. Andy Piotrowski, a Cafe Napoli. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
It's been a very busy year for Wellington Environmental. Tom and his staff had traveled all over making sure that minor issues don't become major disasters. Then there are the times Wellington is called in for emergencies, but nothing Wellington hasn't seen before. They have certified inspectors, chemists, scientists, environmental planners, and that's just some of their expertise. That is why the St. Louis Business Journal gave Wellington such a high ranking. So what will 2024 bring? No one knows, but if you take time to visit the Wellington Environmental Facebook, you're going to see things that might explain health issues at your home or business affecting you, your family, clients. Wellington Environmental Facebook. Tom Wellington and the entire staff wish you a blessed 2024. Your world, cleaner, better, safer. So, as always, be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local and global.
Come on, people. This is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1 and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you why pay more than four. In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner of Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
I have a great whiskey suggestion. Stolach Whiskey, created using natural limestone filtered water from the Ozark Highlands, aged in Missouri oak. Next time, get a bottle. But if you're going to share with friends, you better get at least two bottles. Stolach has the Larry Connors seal of approval. See the full story at Stolach.com. Stolach, Stolloch, from Stone Ledge Distillery.
See the ways of this world just bring you to tears. Keep the Lord in your heart and you'll have nothing to fear. Live the best that you can and don't lie and don't steal. Keep your nose on the grindstone and out of the pills. Well, Daddy, I've been trying. I just can't catch a break. There's too much in this world I can't seem to shake.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. As I was discussing as we wrapped up the previous segment as to how Bidenomics is doing, and even a CNN reporter was talking about that it gets down to how people feel. And if you don't feel like you're winning and you're doing better with your groceries and your gas and your everything else you have to spend, then you're not winning. If you feel you're not winning, then you're not winning, and you won't either. Now, look across industries that are caught up in all this, not just individual families, but they're certainly part of it. And specifically the restaurant industry, which is one of those which took the hardest hit during COVID times because folks could not go out and dine. I mean, and many businesses shuttered, never to reopen again. I'd like a review not only how far we've come from then, but also what's happened over this last year. My guest is Andy Piotrowski with Cafe Napoli. Andy, glad to have you on board, sir.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Well, I don't want to get into politics with you, but I'm very interested in, first of all, how is the, let's begin with where you see the business as a whole is right now when it comes to supply chain and employment.
Sure. Well, supply chain, we've been working with our local providers for decades, and you know they have the same challenges that we do, which is, you know, finding quality people and then more importantly getting them trained and keeping them on board. It's, you know, the sourcing, hiring, and training is the same challenges that we face in the restaurant, and we work with them the best we can, but it can definitely be hard for sure. We're trying to get to the head of the curve while we're growing as a business. And, you know, you have to order things so far in advance. We're getting ready to do our first non-fine dining concept, Napoli Bros. And we're about four and a half months out to opening, and we've got to order pretty much everything. And that's a big chunk of change to spend right now. So equipment can sit in storage until we're ready to go.
Right, but if you don't get it now, you're going to be farther behind. So multiply that by restaurants all across the nation. I mean, you're all going to pretty much the same suppliers, I assume. And whether or not the job market pool is big enough in each area, or another market pulls employees that direction and out of this area. I know the restaurant business, many of you, you help out each other best you can, but it still comes down to making sure your particular restaurant stays open. What about those who have been lost in since COVID and everything since that time?
Yeah, I don't know where a lot of these people have gone. Originally, when we, before COVID, Cafe Napoli was around for 28 years at the time, and we had a lot of employees that were long tenured people with us that made careers out of it. You know, that's one thing you don't see a lot in this industry, especially in St. Louis, is people making a career as cooks, servers, and bartenders. And when COVID happened, I don't know where they went, and a lot of them did not come back. And it's been difficult. You know, I mean, we saw, you know, businesses offering incentives and people signing bonuses to come on, and you know, those things, you know, I can't afford to do stuff like that on a regular basis.
Oh, of course not. I mean, I'm passing a billboard on the Interbelt the other day for an airline offering $200,000 bonus in small print for qualified pilots and so forth. But I mean, the airlines are looking for pilots. Other businesses are looking for salespeople or reps or something. And then you get down to one-on-one dining and a server at the table. If you don't have someone that knows what they're doing and has been trained properly, then the business is going to lose out again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, people think that, you know, being a server or being a bartender is easy, and it might be at some establishments. But you know, we've been in business for 3.5 decades, and because of the service that we provide, we aren't trying to just give people dinner when they come in here. We want to give them a great dining experience, and that goes way beyond, you know, just bringing them their food.
And again, having food at a price that they feel comfortable with, because with the increasing pressure you're feeling on the supply line, how's that shaking down for not just you, but businesses across the nation?
Yeah, prices of food continue to rise for sure. We see that each year, especially coming out of the pandemic. The easy way to combat cost increases is to raise prices or reduce portions, and that can be a recipe for disaster for sure.
Right, right.
You know, we can't forget what made us successful, and we've got to just find, you know, more creative ways to be more efficient.
Well, like you said, if you can get it more the homegrown or local businesses, you're supporting them for one thing, but secondly, it's quicker and less added cost for transportation, things of that nature. But you can't get fresh seafood right here in your backyard.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, and that's been a challenge too, because when we open Napoli Sea, so we go through great lengths to get, you know, fresh fish flown in daily. It's difficult to get them from the local guys for sure.
Now, I look at also Small Business Administration stats show that only 50% of new restaurants survive just the first year. And if they do, 4 out of those 5 will fail within the next 5 years. Those are pretty startling stats to be in the restaurant business.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, even very successful operators fail sometimes. And there are many factors involved in being successful, but I believe that being underfunded and inexperienced are some of the most important reasons that restaurants fail for sure.
Is it also got to do with the ego of folks? Oh, I'd love to have a restaurant and a bar with my name on it.
I have a lot of friends of mine who are former professional athletes that have tried that and have said, man, Andy, I should have listened to you. It's not as easy as I thought it was.
Yeah, because their name is not only on the bar of the restaurant, it's also on the loan paper.
That's exactly right. You know, I got a funny story real quick. Joe Cresta, one of the founders of Pasta House.
Right.
When I was, you know, 10, 11 years old, I was hanging out at the restaurant on a weekend like I always was, and bussing tables. And I went over to his table, and he asked me, you know, what I wanted to do when I got older. And I said, I want to be in the restaurant, Mr. Cresta. I want to be in the restaurant business just like my dad. He said some choice things to me that I can't say on the radio. And I was upset and hurt, and I didn't talk to him for many, many years.
Are you
serious? I avoided him when he came into the restaurant. Yeah. And now, now when he comes into the restaurant, I go up to him and I give him a kiss on the cheek and I said, any other advice, I will listen to you. Because I know what you mean now.
Well, it's that's true. It's you're right. I mean, it's funny. And talking about the pay issues and so forth, I'll tell you a quick story about my oldest daughter. When she got old enough to work, she went to work at a local place that is now closed. And, but she wanted to be the, hostess. She wanted to be able to sign people in and take them to the table. She said, I don't want to be picking up dirty dishes and doing all that stuff. Well, she soon realized that the waiters and the wait staff were making more money, and especially the waiters and waitresses, if they took good care of the clients, as opposed to what she's being paid just to stand there and welcome people to the restaurant. In this business still, if you're going to work at it and stay with it, you're going to have to put work in.
Absolutely. And that goes back to the ego thing you just said. If you're going to own a restaurant, you better know how to wash dishes. You better know how to cook. You better know how to do every single thing in the restaurant, because there will come a time, and there has been many, and there will be more in the future, that someone in that position is not going to be there. And you know who's going to step in is the owner. The owner's going to have to step in and fill that.
Yeah, I had another friend who had also – had his dream come true. He got his name on a restaurant, opened it up, very fine dining. As he said then, he said, if the dishwasher doesn't show up, the whole place comes to a halt.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, and people have realized that, corporate restaurants have realized that, and they pay these dishwashers an hourly wage that makes it very difficult for a small mom and pop family own and operated business to keep up with. But if we're going to keep up with it, if we want to make sure that we've got a consistent person back there doing those things, the heart of the restaurant, you know, you got to pay what everyone else is paying. And it's difficult, like I said, but we've got to just figure out, you know, ways that we can continue to grow and not have to put it all on the guests.
You're listening to, I'm sorry. You're listening to Andy Piatosa of Cafe Napoli. Your remark with Joe Fresco about getting into the business is much like kids that want to grow up and be a farmer like their dad. And then once they get into it, they realize, how did the man ever sleep at night with all this hanging over him?
Yeah, well, I understand that very, very much so. My three boys all want to be in the restaurant business too. And I tell them that, you know, we will have discussion about that. And I think that you might want to go into a career like your mother, not in the restaurant.
Well, now, I guess the first thing would be to train them up into the business. Are you even considering doing that? And it's not that it's not a great business if it's run right, but you've got to be really on top of your game.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I want them to. It's funny. I used to say that I want them to have a college education and then they can make their decision. But with what's going on in the world right now, I don't know that that is exactly what I want. I want them to definitely have, maybe go to a trade school and have something that they can fall back on, and not just solely rely on the restaurant industry for sure.
You nailed a great point there, because trade school operation, I mean, we're always going to need, and I know you will, plumbers and repairmen, electricians and so forth. So, you need some skilled labor to come fix it so you can continue operating.
Man, I tell you what, I want to come back in my next life and be an electrician or a plumber, because when I call these guys, man, it's crazy. They've got a pretty good gig.
Andy, I want to thank, I know you guys are very busy during this time of the year, but I appreciate you taking time to give us an insight on the overall. Now, going forward into this next year, what are you predicting?
Well, I don't know. Election year, it's going to be interesting. Luckily, our clientele has been very loyal for many decades, and they continue to support us. And I hope that they just continue to this year as well.
All right, Andy, I do appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you. Bye bye.
You bet. Andy Piatosa, Cafe Napoli. Coming up, a tragedy among tragedies in Israel, and there's no excusing. But we'll try to tell you the details of it. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Ackerman Toyota has the 2024 models. You're going to be impressed. Check them out in person at Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. In fact, you've got to see the 2024 Toyota Sequoia. Very impressive. This is the time to buy and get top dollar for your vehicle. Looking for pre-owned? Ackerman Toyota can also help you. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is News Talk STL.
One of the five most traumatic experiences in life is moving. I can assure you that McGuire Moving can help ease that pressure. Moving into a new home or a new business, locally, internationally, McGuire is rated number one. More than 80 years of experience. Free estimate, call McGuire, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuireMoving.com.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield is so luxurious you might think you have to be a member. You don't, but you will quickly see why Lit won the 2023 Riverfront Times Best Smoking Lounge, Best Smoke Shop for the second time in a row. Quality cigars, premium drinks. So join me at Lit, just off 40 in the district at Chesterfield. For special events, entertainment, always check the website, litstl.com, litstl.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
All right. Here's the situation. I've ignored this story up until now because I thought, well, I could, you know, but I'm not going to ignore it entirely. If you had not heard of what happened in the Senate the other day, this might come as a shock for you. But I want to present it in the fashion that Breitbart News put it together. So, again, this is their piece I'm reading to you. It begins after Joe Biden was elected to the White House. Democrat pundits hailed the return of adults in charge in Washington. However, since his election, there's been no shortage of scandals exposing Democrat degeneracy and perversion, including in the halls of power of D.C. and in the White House. I think the stage is set. It begins by, here are the top most recent Democrat scandals under Joe Biden's presidency. This has nothing to do right now with the Hunter Biden stuff as far as money hidden, the inquiries, the impeachment inquiry hearing, so forth. This has entirely something different, and yet you have to ask, if there is no one really in charge, you would expect the kids to go stupid. And that applies to Republicans as well, not just Democrats. But again, with number one that just recently happened. Democrat staffer having sex in the Senate. Graphic video emerging December 15 of a Democrat staffer for Democrat Senator Ben Cardin, Democrat of Maryland, having anal sex with someone in a U.S. Senate hearing room inside the U.S. Capitol, which is government property and American taxpayer funded. The video showed the staffer naked on all fours on a table where the senators conduct their business. He has since, surprise, surprise, been fired. Now, before I continue, I want to reemphasize how the Breitbart piece phrased it. Someone in a U.S. hearing room in the U.S. Capitol, which is government property and American taxpayer funded. Bill Clinton. Monica Lewinsky. No video, but thank God there was a dress that had evidence of what she said had happened. And I had folks all over me say, well, you're just attacking Clinton because of who? No, I'm attacking, this is the guy, a president of our United States, that not, as a man, he can do whatever he wants with or without Hillary's consent. It's personal to that extent. But when you're doing it either in or out, just outside the Oval Office, I do have a difficult issue with it, extremely so. And on that particular day when that story broke, actually the following day, I'll remind you, for those of you who've heard this before, you're going to have to bear with me. But all the networks were down in Cuba covering the Pope going to Cuba for the first time. Dan Rather for CBS News, I was at a CBS station then, was down there, and he began his report, I'm here in Cuba, we're going to be covering the Pope coming into Cuba for the first time a Catholic priest has done this, a Catholic bishop, I should say, the pontiff, to be more accurate. But first to Washington for a story, and that was the Bill Clinton story. I had an argument in the newsroom with our news director at the time. I said, we need to lead our 5 o'clock news, which is the first newscast of record for the day. Not that there weren't others at that point, but we need to lead with that because we're ahead of the network at 5:30. No, we're going to lead with the Pope. He said, it's historic. I said, it's also historic what Bill Clinton is accused of doing inside the White House. Well, it was not resolved before we went to air. So I did what could have cost me a job at that point, but how are you going to fire me over being accurate with my journalistic instinct? I began the opening line, welcome to the news. Our main story tonight is Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky is accused, da-da-da-da-da. And then because we had a piece following that was going to deal with the Pope going to Cuba and actually had video and so forth, well then, and I said, and another story is, well, of course, the news director was ballistic by the time I got off the air. And what happened with CBS Evening News, just as I said, Rather began saying, here I am here, but back in D.C., he gave up his own lead position, basically. And the next day, not one of those network anchors was in Cuba. They'd all gone back to D.C., New York, to start covering that story, not ignoring the Pope being in Cuba, but letting other reporters and correspondents do it. So that was why I had so much issue with Clinton and the Monica Lewinsky, especially because it happened in our federal building. What do you think would have happened to a January 6er if they'd done something like that off in a hallway, got caught, or done what happened in the Senate, and they just fired the guy, then I got to charge him for anything? We'll see. Then we have, back in September, the Washington Post revealing that Susanna Gibson, a Democrat candidate for a Virginia Senate seat, had performed sex acts with her husband for a live online audience on a website encouraging viewers to request sex acts and pay them with tips. Some of them were online as recent as September 30, 2022. She did lose her race, by the way, when she was running for a Virginia seat. She lost by fewer than 1,000 votes. I guess some of them liked it. Let's keep the video going. And then, of course, we do have this issue. Back in July, remember this? A baggie of cocaine found inside the west wing of the White House. Secret Service found it. Later claiming there was, quote, insufficient DNA present, so they could not identify the owner of the baggie. Fox News' Jesse Waters later claimed documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act request showed that there were three vials of DNA from the investigation. And yet they want to tell us, can't determine anything? In the original story, if you remember, it was in a locker where folks put their possessions and lock them before they go into another part of the White House. Visitors do it, so forth. Well, somebody had to have a key for that locker because they're all used with keys to open and close, not a combination of any type. So who had the key? Simple question. Where was the key? Couldn't find it. Well, who had the key? Somebody had to check it out. Had to be written down, did they not? Of course they did. They wanted to just go away, which for the most part it has. And then just a month before that, a trans influencer at a Pride event at the White House, at an event that was hosting children, the trans influencer pulled down his dress, grabbed his fake breast, burying them for the children. Well, the White House was forced to condemn that act and ban the transgender from visiting the White House again. But they opened the door for the trans influencer to come into the Pride event and in front of children be available to do something like that. And then, of course, you have back in May, the Navy revealing it recruited a drag queen influencer, maybe the same one they kicked out of the White House, don't have a name here, as part of a pilot program, no pun intended, as a pilot, to help recruit more in the Navy. The influencer, an active duty sailor, goes by the name Harpy Daniels, performing for other service members during deployments on ships. The government just over and over continued to do this under the Biden administration. I would call this out if it were under Trump and if it were under Reagan administration, and they should be calling it out as well. But for the most part, the state-controlled media, they make a little noise over it, and then they just move on. Nothing to see here. That bag of cocaine, by the way. If Jesse Waters and his report are correct that there were three vials of DNA they took and they could not identify it, come on. Really? All right, let me turn to a more serious subject. Defense Secretary Austin is back in Israel, reassuring Israel, we stand with you, we're still here, we're still your friend. And when they continue to say something like that over and over again, like, I love you, I really love you, I love you, I love you, and you begin to think, really? And, of course, the fighting does continue. And over the weekend, in the fog of war, a tragedy.
An unbearable tragedy. That's how Benjamin Netanyahu described the loss of three hostages who were accidentally killed by Israeli forces in Gaza.
Israel is in mourning over the three hostages mistakenly killed by IDF soldiers Friday. The hostages had spelled out a sign outside their building that said, "Save us hostages," in Hebrew, with leftover food. They were also carrying a stick with a white cloth and were unarmed and shirtless, yet they were mistaken for terrorists.
It broke my heart, broke the entire nation's heart, and our hearts go to the families at this tough hour. At this difficult time, it's important for me to also send support to our warriors. They sacrificed their souls to achieve a crushing victory over our enemies and to return our abducted.
In an address to the nation, Netanyahu said military pressure is necessary to free the hostages.
We will learn the lessons. We will apply the lessons. And we will not let go of the military and political effort to bring all the hostages home.
Now, again, in the fog of war, there is death by friendly fire. In this case, the IDF, again, this happening Friday, the IDF by Saturday said it is actual fact that, yes, we shot and killed three hostages. They were shirtless, one of them waving a white flag, at least one, and calling out in Hebrew. Soldiers thought they were being lured into a trap. We do know that the Hamas terrorists have often dressed in civilian clothing, getting rid of any of their head garb or anything that would identify them as Hamas, so maybe they would not be shot, and then trying to get closer to the Israeli forces to hit them with a grenade or something of that nature. The hostages had emerged at 10 a.m. Friday morning, according to the IDF report. One of the soldiers who saw them shouted, "Terrorist!" The soldiers opened fire against protocol, which does forbid firing on someone with a white flag. Now, whether or not saw the white flag, that's not clear. How many there were, that's not clear. Two of them were killed almost instantly. Another wounded ran into a building shouting for help in Hebrew. A battalion commander ordered them to stop firing. They kept shooting, killing him. And at no point, according to the investigation, did the soldiers, including the commander, imagine the three could be hostages. Now, that's a report from one source. Let me read it to you as CNN reports it. They say on Saturday, the trio emerged from a building about 10 meters from a group of Israeli troops. They were shirtless, waving a white flag. According to an official who spoke to journalists, at least one soldier felt threatened and opened fire, killing two of the men immediately. The third wounded ran back inside. The unit did hear a cry for help in Hebrew, at which time the brigade commander ordered the troops to stop shooting, but there was another burst of gunfire, and the third hostage died later. The issue is, according to the troops on the ground, we did not anticipate being approached by hostages. We found it impossible hostages would be free coming toward us like that. And, of course, if you're a Hamas terrorist and you're approaching them, you're going to be waving a white flag. This kind of action, and I feel for the Israeli soldiers that were involved in shooting down Israeli citizens, this kind of action is exactly the same thing that happened repeatedly in Vietnam and other wars as well. Someone coming toward you appears to be nice and friendly, and then all of a sudden they blow you up. Suicide bombers, using a child sometimes to run ahead to get to the troops, and they just calling out, "Do you have any candy or candy?" And they don't want them close because they don't know if the child has been recruited, or maybe not even aware that a bomb's been placed on the body and somebody triggers it by remote device. It's very easy to second guess what happened, just as it is on the streets of America when police get into a shootout as to what went down in what order. No one's making excuses here. And the IDF is saying, yes, we shot and killed three hostages. They're admitting it. That was Friday it happened, and by Saturday they felt they'd completed their investigation and admitted, yes, we did. We did exactly as reported. But, right after that, over the weekend, came word that a mother and daughter had been killed in cold blood by the IDF. They were in the only Catholic church in Gaza City. Pope Francis immediately condemned it as terrorism. But at a press briefing, the Israeli defense said there was nothing to show that we had anything to do with this at all. There was no fighting in that area. Said we looked into it, and even when the truth is the most inconvenient thing to acknowledge, we admit it, as was the case with the three hostages. But we had nothing to do with the killing of a woman and her daughter in a Catholic church. But, of course, all you had to do was say, look, they've already killed three hostages. Now they're shooting an innocent woman and her daughter in a Catholic church, a sniper taking them out. And, of course, it carries more credibility because the IDF just acknowledged, yes, we did make a mistake with the three hostages from Israel. All you have to do is have one germ of truth or one falsehood, and it will multiply. As always, remember our pledge, one nation under God.